The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
On this episode of the History Worth Saving podcast, we're talking to a friend of mine who is restoring a town. I mean, a lot of people restore a house, they restore a barn, but I've never met anyone quite like Adam, who sets out with his brother to restore an entire community. Now, it's not exactly what you think. This is an old community. Just the ruins, the barn, the old buildings, they were all there, including an impressive set of falls. Adam and his brother, they saw this piece of property not far from where they grew up in Pennsylvania, and they just had to have it. So they got their money together, they bought it, and now their mission is to restore it to its former glory, the town of Stoddardville. I've never heard anything quite as ambitious as this, and it truly is a great American story, and it is history worth saving. Please welcome Adam Carrick to the show. Adam, you're in your truck this morning. It's about 20 degrees up there in Pennsylvania, and you're outside the barn there in Stoddardville. Paint this picture for me. What's the plan for all this? Because it's a noble endeavor.
Yeah, good morning, Matt. And it's about chilly. Just got in my truck from working on the barn here in Stoddardville. But, you know, the big plan here is, I'll just go through the story from the beginning. My father grew up right across the river here in Tobyhanna Township in Blakesley, the town of Blakesley. Formerly a town of Stoddardville, and he grew up here, knew about this area. My family's been here since the early 1800s, and we've been farming here forever. The family farm still sits across the river, and is still owned by the family. But we had the opportunity to purchase some land up here, including the river, the Great Falls of the Lehigh River, and the ruins of Stoddardville that was built in 1815. So we took that opportunity. We bought it from the estate of Commander John Butler, who was in the Navy during World War II, and could trace his lineage all the way back to Colonel Zebulon Butler, who fought the British and the Native Americans in Wilkes-Barre. So we bought the land from his estate, and we began cleaning it up, all the garbage that's accumulated here over the years, and cleaning up the foundations that were left here. You know, we have a couple barns, a mansion that was built in, we think, between 1810 and 1815, and all the outbuildings that went with them. There was even a grist mill, which was the largest in the state of Pennsylvania when it was built. It was about 50 feet by 70 feet and 4.5 stories tall. There was a shingle mill, and there was a very large sawmill. They were all powered by water wheels right next to the waterfalls. So all of those foundations were left here. They burned down over a period of 200 years. And we decided to start rebuilding the barn that went in back of the Stoddard House, which was it was later called the Maples, which was a boarding house. The barn that went right behind it, we just decided to start rebuilding it. So my cousin, who's a mason, he came out for the summer that I left the Navy, got left active duty, which was 2013. We started rebuilding the foundation, and then my good friend that I grew up with, his uncle is a timber framer, and we took down a couple barns across New Jersey and Pennsylvania and used the parts to recreate this barn that was originally built in 1875.
And you've learned a lot about barns. You and I have talked about barns. I have a barn on my property, a very small barn that I work out of. It's in our logo for History Worth Saving, but it's now the studio. At least the old corn crib is. But this barn has been an education for you, and you're one of the most versed guys on barns I've ever met. I mean, you can tell me anything and everything about a barn. This barn is so big, just to give folks who are not familiar with barns up there in the Mid-Atlantic region, that This barn is so big, you had your wedding in this barn.
That's correct. The original barn is about 48 feet by 36 feet. And then over time, the family that owned this land, that owned the barn, added on to it. So there's actually three barns that kind of look like a telescope. They get smaller as you go to the left. And we're currently restoring the third barn in that series. But the large barn is 48 by 36. The middle barn is about 36 by 36. And the smaller barn is just a little bit smaller than that. So,
but they're tall, too. That's the thing that you can't leave out. How high is this barn? Because it's two stories, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just it's under 40 feet at the peak for the large barn, which, you know, we put all the siding on it and had to paint it. I remember my wife, Lacey, was up on the scaffolding a week before our wedding painting the barn red. So it's a full family affair up here.
it's almost as tall as it is long. I mean, that's the impressive thing about this is these are big mammoth structures, and all of Stoddardsville is going to be that way.
Yeah, I mean, like I said earlier, the grist mill was 50 feet by 70 feet and 4.5 stories tall, and that was all masonry. So the walls at the there's two corners that are still there next to the waterfalls, and at the base they're just around 3 feet thick. So I, you know, like you said, it's an ambitious project, but I'd like to preserve the technology that went into those mills, the grist mill and the sawmill, for posterity, so people and their kids can come up and see that, you know, this was a frontier town back in the early 1800s. You know, we had just finished the Second War with the British, the War of 1812. We were just coming off the victory of that in 1815, and you know, America had really solidified itself in on the world stage, and really shrugged off the yoke of Britain for sure. And we started building canals and all the infrastructure that would go into a big nation. And one of those canals was the Lehigh Canal. The plan was to take the Lehigh River and put a series of 27 locks on it that went all the way to the Delaware River, which of course runs past Philadelphia. So John Stoddard, who was originally born in 1777 in England, he emigrated to the United States and had a very thriving dry goods store in Philadelphia. And his goal was to take the grain from Wilkes-Barre and Scranton in the Wyoming Valley that at the time was being shipped down the Susquehanna River to Baltimore. He wanted to take that grain and have it milled at his town of Stoddardsville on the Lehigh, and then put that on what they called them arcs, which were just 20 by 40 foot barges. And they would take those barges down the Lehigh Canal to the Delaware, to his store in Philadelphia. So that's why the whole town was built around this giant grist mill.
It is a company town. And what would have become of the falls, of those gorgeous waterfalls that are now on your property?
Yeah, I mean, they've been flowing since the Lenni-Lenape Native Americans were on this land. When Stoddard had his mills going, I believe they had a dam right above the waterfalls and diverted some of the water through a giant race, which is just a big ditch that was called, like I said, a mill race that fed the water to the water wheels at the various mills. So they still would have flowed. The water would have gone over the dam and over the falls, but the dam would have brought the water up high enough to go through the race that would channel the water to the various mills.
And I guess those arcs, as he called it, they would have been docked somewhere. I mean, it still would have had the natural beauty of the land. But nonetheless, this is a big thing that Stoddard had in mind. And when you start thinking about what you're trying to do and bringing this back, you're not a guy that is just rolling in, you know, in trust fund money, and you don't have oil wells on your property. This is a big project, and it begs the question, why? I mean, other than doing it to save it, I would imagine that maybe down the road there are some commercial ventures that could come from this. But the real drive that you've often talked about is that the story needs to be told. This just needs to happen.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, my family, my aunt has done a lot of work, you know, preserving a lot of the written history. There's a small museum up here. But I would like to preserve the physical nature and the beauty, you know, both historically natural and, you know, that American spirit that really drove this town originally. You know, Stoddart was an immigrant. He came here from England with great ideas, and he tried to make them work as best he could. You know, unfortunately, floods, fires, and the railroad being built nearby kind of put him out of business. But like you said, it was a big project for its day. You know, between the gristmill, the sawmill, the house he built for his son Isaac, which was just about the size of the barn. It was about 48 feet by 36 feet deep. A beautiful Georgian mansion that sat on top of the hill here and overlooked the waterfalls. An interesting story. My grandparents were married for 2 weeks, and they were living in this mansion in the winter of 1951. It was December 21st, 1951. And if you talk to my grandmother today, she'll say that she thinks it was set on fire by someone in the middle of the night. And they crawled out of it, rescued. They called her Aunt Lulie. Her name was Julia Stull, but she was like an aunt to my grandfather. And my grandfather carried Aunt Lulie out of the burning mansion. And of course, Lulie wanted to go back into the house, like a captain kind of going down with her ship, because that was her family's home since they bought it from the Stoddarts in the middle 1800s. So my grandfather picked her up again, carried her down to the barn that we're now restoring, and put his wife, my grandmother, and Aunt Lulie in the in his car. But where were the car keys? The car keys were in the burning house. So he ran across the old bridge across the Lehigh in December in his bare feet, all the way up to the family farm, which is, I'm guessing, about 3/4 of a mile away. They called the fire department. The fire department showed up. And to his dying day, he always called the fire department the foundation savers, because that's all that was left when they got here 45 minutes later. So that was the kind of I always say the Maples or the Stoddart Mansion. It started with a married couple, because John Stoddart built it for his son Isaac, who married Colonel Zebulon Butler's granddaughter in the 1800s. John Stoddart was so happy his son Isaac married so well that he built him this massive house to oversee his operations here in Stoddartsville. So it started with a married couple. It ended with a married couple. But in 2018, my wife and I, we got married on the back lawn that we cleared out of all the trees that were there and all the bushes. And we laid down some sod and we had our ceremony there.
I think it's fantastic. I think it's a great story. You know, this kind of stuff gets in your blood. I mean, there's old houses everywhere. And I think that what you're doing is so wonderful, because there is such a family tie for you to this property that you almost have to do this. I mean, I'm guessing that it would just nag at you and nag at you until, if you're not doing something, you're not doing anything. Is that kind of the way this goes down, Adam, with you every day?
Yeah, I'd say that's pretty accurate. Working to me is almost like therapy. I like to stay busy, and always loved architecture, and I, as you know, I loved history. So, you know, the chance to get your hands on history, you know, putting this barn back together and seeing these massive timbers with these mortise and tenon joints, you know, the whole frame of these barns were built from hand-hewn oak. So the hewing is a form of taking a round log and making it into square lumber, but with your hands, with an axe. So you still see the marks on these beautiful hand-hewn oak timbers, and the marriage marks, which are marks on each part of the joint that goes together, so that the old-timers, they take a chisel and put a Roman numeral into each part of the joint, so they knew how to assemble it, because you know, they'd assemble it, take it down, and then put it back up where it needs to go up during a barn raising, which we had the opportunity to have here in 2014 as we were erecting this barn. I said, you know, we have to have a little festival like that did back in the day and have a little barn raising. So we raised one frame of this structure, just like the old timers did, with big block and tackle and pike poles to push it up. But it really gave you an appreciation for the old boys who put these things up with just hands and you know, oxen, maybe some horses to help. So it's been a neat experience so far.
And the rest of it, I'm guessing you did 2018 style.
Yeah, our timber framer, my buddy's uncle, Skip Yates. He had a truck, a flatbed in the back with a crane. Of course,
that a little easier than
that makes
block
things
and tackle.
A lot easier. Yeah, but I wanted to get the experience because how many times do you put a barn up the old fashioned way? So
I think it's great, and I love the story. Now there's other stuff there. I mean, this was a community town built around a company. That was in the grist mill business. They were milling all types of things, I'm guessing, there in that grist mill. Mm-hmm. But
absolutely.
There was a lot of, was there the hotel, I guess, was really the, what you're calling the Maples, I guess now, or
later it was called the Maples. It was used as a boarding house.
A boarding house,
By the Stull family. But just across the river, I'm actually looking at it, right across the river was the Stoddard Inn. And that, I think they had like 8 bedrooms in there or something like that.
Now, but is that on the property as well, or is that not?
No,
on the
property? That's not on my property, but it's right across the river on a neighboring property.
Wow!
But that building originally was built in 1815, but there's a massive forest fire that came through here in 1875. The records say it was called the Great Inferno of 1875, and it pretty much burned the whole mountain off. The story goes that the Stull family saved the Maples, the old Stoddard mansion, by placing wet carpets on the roof, and they jumped into the river to survive. And it pretty much burned the whole town down, including the grist mill and the sawmill, and you know, all the timbers that supported the walls burned out. And that's when the mill kind of started crumbling and falling apart.
So one of the great questions, I guess, in your life is who would burn something down like this house? Who would do that? I'm sure there's lots of speculation. Has the mystery ever been poked at to the point where you think you can solve it?
No. My grandmother has her theories. It's interesting. We had the University of Kutztown archaeological department out here, and they do archaeological digs with their students every summer. And they were actually digging in the foundation because all the foundations here have been preserved. It's always been in private hands. So it's never been disturbed since it burned down. And they had a forensic student with them. And I believe they determined that the fire probably started in the front, if you're in the house, front right corner of the house. And that's where my grandfather said it started. And there wasn't really anything out in that corner because there was a porch that went off the front from that corner. And then, you know, that was it. That was in the old section, as they called it, because it wasn't insulated. No one lived in there in the winter. My grandparents and Aunt Lulie, they lived in the addition that was on the back of it. So there was nobody out there, and they're just not sure what happened. But my grandmother will tell you that she believes it was probably burned down by someone.
An old feud.
I don't know. I couldn't tell you.
That would be eating away at me, Adam. I'd have to find out. You know, I'd have to hire somebody to come out and figure that out. I mean, there's all kind of stuff that you could figure out here that not only ties back to your family, but more importantly, the American story at large here, which is what's so wonderful. I mean, this is industry at its finest at a time when, you know, we were growing, we were building things, and we had big ideas back then. What has surprised you the most about doing this?
Probably the overall vision that Stoddard had. It was so large. You know, the grist mill alone was reported to be the largest in the state of Pennsylvania when it was built. But, you know, you had to have a company store. You had to, you know, he built this house for his son. You know, and they brought all the timber in wagons. We're talking, you know, horses and oxen that did all the work back then. They brought all of that timber, all the finished timber, or I shouldn't say timber, but finished moldings and all of the details all came from Philadelphia on wagons up to here to finish that mansion. But the mansion, the general store, you had, you know, the grist mill, the sawmill, all the barns and outbuildings. I mean, he was really building a little town in the middle of nowhere. I mean, there was nothing out here at the time. Just, you know, absolutely nothing.
And how many people do you think he had working there at that time when it was, you know, at its heyday, so to speak?
In its heyday, they said there was about 40 homes or, you know, so I don't know how many people that would necessarily translate to, but there had to have been a number of workers obviously running the mills, but the grist mill was an Oliver Evans type automated grist mill. Oliver Evans, of course, the famous industrial revolutionary, I guess you'd call him. He developed a system of belts and pulleys that would run all of the parts inside of the grist mill. And it was the same system that Washington used in his grist mill that was at his distillery on Dogue Creek down near Mount Vernon. He converted his to an Oliver Evans type grist mill as well. But so he needed people to run all these things, but the grist mill didn't need a whole lot of people because it was, you know, modern for that area. It was very automated, but you had to have a miller. The miller's house sits on the other side of the river. That was rebuilt after the fire in 1876. And, you know, you had to have mill hands that ran everything under the miller's supervision. So there had to have been a lot of people here, but the best report I could say is 40 homes at its heyday.
So the boy from Stoddardsville, so to speak, runs off and joins the Navy. See the world, you work in business, and now you've had an interesting naval career. I mean, you flew as a wizzo in the back seat of an F-18.
Well, I grew up in Huntington Valley, which is just outside of Philadelphia. But like I said, my father grew up here, so we would come up for, you know, a couple weeks in the summer and spend it with my grandparents, swim in the falls. And I'd always say, what's that old building over there? You know, the grist mill. But so I didn't necessarily grow up here, but I spent time here. And now, of course, I live here. But my naval career, I went to the Naval Academy, graduated in 2005. And then went out to Whidbey Island, Washington, flying EA-6B Prowlers as an ECMO, Electronic Countermeasures Officer. And then from there, we transitioned to the EA-18G Growler, which is a variant of the Super Hornet. I was an instructor for a little while, and then I got out of the Navy and joined the reserves. I continued flying for a little while in VAQ 209 out there in Whidbey Island, flying the Growler. And then I got lucky enough to join the Blue Angels for a little while for the last 2 years. And now I'm just coming off active duty from that stint with the Blues.
And that's where you and I met, of course.
Yep.
And had to hear about all of this fascinating stuff that you're doing on the family farm now, if you will. This property that you and your brother have purchased, for those that aren't familiar with the Lehigh River and that particular area, how far are you from Wilkes-Barre Scranton?
Oh, we're not far, probably about a 20-minute drive from Wilkes-Barre, a little bit further from Scranton. But we're about 90 miles north of Philadelphia and 90 miles west of New York City. So we're
right
close,
there
but
in
not
the middle.
Too close.
Literally in the middle of nowhere, between everywhere. So that's where you're located. I would think that every morning is so exciting for you, because right now you're sort of in this transition period where you're really getting a chance to see what your future might look like, Adam, when you have time to just work on this place, because obviously there's a second career for you coming. You've got to make money to pay for all of this. But right now, in this interim period, you're really getting to sink your hands on into some wonderful projects. What are you working on right now?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Like I said, we're my dad and I are out here right now. We're just finishing up the third part of the third barn in the series of barns that were built here. I had to stop working on it right after our wedding. My wife and I got married here in 2018 in August, and then I reported for active duty at the end of August. So we didn't really have time to finish everything, and it's been standing here for about that time. So we're just finishing things up now, getting the roof on it before winter really sets in up here. But that's the current project that's going on. My wife and I just bought a house right across the river, still in Stoddardsville. But when we bought it, when you go into it, it's like walking back into 1960. You know, we have a beautiful caloric Truray, you know, avocado green stove and all of those types of things. So
that's really valuable right now, though. You know, I mean, it's all incredibly valuable.
Maybe, I don't know, but you still need a match to light your stove. So
Well, that's true. But I mean, we have a friend. I know you know Ricardo von Puttkamer, a great photographer and a wonderful guy. Ricardo would come haul that thing away from you. You just call him up because he loves all that stuff. I mean, but so that's really cool, though. I mean, you're right across from the river. This is obviously the property you're talking to us from right now. Will at some point, I'm guessing, be where the family lives. You, maybe your brother, and whoever else. I mean, there's enough land up there to house everyone. That has to be exciting.
It is, for sure. I mean, that's probably one of the greatest things about this whole project is I've gotten to do all of it with my family, whether it's my wife, you know, my father, my brother. We all, you know, everybody's got an old pair of Carhartts that's seen a lot of use and abuse out here at the barn. So, you know, whether it's my mom bringing us food or helping out where she can, or my wife, like I said, was painting the barn a week before we were married, or my dad and my brother, who we've really done the lion's share of, framing and shingles and siding and all that stuff. But I think that's, you can't put any kind of value on those experiences. It's priceless, really, in the end.
And then at some point, will you rebuild the house?
I'd love to. I'd really like to rebuild the maples. Like I said, the foundation's still there. We have photos of what the building looked like originally. And I think it'd be great to have a showcase for the archaeologists, make a little archaeological museum out of the mansion.
So maybe a chance for the public to see it. If they're interested in seeing it, we'll try and get some pictures from you to put up here. The foundations and whatnot, so folks can take a tour of this. But eventually this will become a museum, eventually some type of open-air museum where folks can come out, hopefully, and see some of this. That's a big thing right now, right? Agritourism. So if you get this mill up and running again, Adam, I spend dollars on an antiquated piece of technology, and why not? You know?
Like I said, it's an ambitious project, and I don't know if I'll ever finish it in my lifetime, but I want to share it, but share it responsibly. That's good for the environment. That's good for the community, and that is it's good for the country. You know, for children to come up and see this is how we. You know, what the American spirit is all about. And in a way, it's honoring my family's legacy and Commander Butler, who we bought this land from his estate. It's honoring his legacy, too, because he believed in, sharing this beautiful piece of land for its historical and its natural wonders.
It's a gorgeous piece of property, and I'm so thankful that the intent is to share it some point with the public and let folks see this this incredible place of Stoddardsville that was part of an immigrant's American dream and now part of yours. So, Adam Carrick, thanks for coming on. That's truly history worth saving. I appreciate it, bud. And I look forward to coming up there. I'm going to bring the RV and just see it all.
I got
someday.
A house for you. I keep collecting the houses around here, so I got one for you.
I'm ready. I just need to come up and frame it, right? That's the...
yeah, there you go. I'll put you to work.
That's right. I can't wait. Adam Carrick, thanks for coming on.
You bet,
great, great to hear from you. Get back to work now, okay? Because I want to come visit.
All right, my friend. Good to talk to you.
Listen, if you want to find more out about Stoddardsville and Adam's project, we'll post some pictures here, and we'll have them on our social media sites. And, of course, in the newsletter. If you're not a member yet of the newsletter... get on there, sign up. Can I just tell you what I forgot to do? Yeah, I know it's already December, and I realized the other day that on the calendar I was supposed to hit send on the November one. I did this in October. You'd think I would learn, but expect yet another one. By the way, if you haven't already signed up for it, just do it. It's right there at historyworthsaving.com. Just log on there, put your email in there. Clearly, I won't send you spam because I forget to send the newsletter, so just send it over there, and we'll be glad you did. There is some stuff coming up on this show. We're turning it into video. And if Adam hadn't been in his truck this morning, we would have maybe coaxed him into doing it now. But next guest is someone that I think you're really going to want to tune in here. And hopefully we'll have it on video as well. So stand by for that as some changes occur. Still the same podcast, but just with video now if you want it. That's coming up in the second half of this month. Listen, I so appreciate you listening to this show. If you want to help us out, you can join the newsletter. You can tell your friends about it. Great American stories told right here. Thanks again for listening. So long for now, everyone.